Let's make it happen, Captain!
From deep inside the Death Star, Microsoft asset number 334307.
And I'm Gov Maharaj.
And welcome to Defrag. All right, Gov, let's just get started. We already talked, you didn't watch the Super Bowl last night because you're Canadian.
I just caught the highlights. That's good enough for me. Okay. I had other more interesting things to do on a Sunday.
All right, we got no one looking at us in Bing. We really have nothing to talk about, so let's get started. All right, from Eddie, says, I have IE pinned to the taskbar. With all apps, when they're pinned, one can press the icon to minimize and maximize them. With IE and only IE, no other apps have this issue. After pressing it once to minimize and then maximize, pressing it again does nothing. Using the keyboard shortcut, Win Key plus 1, does work better, but it also stops after some time. I think we know when that time is. The focus does stay on IE. I even press on it to make sure after pressing on it manually it gets minimized and then maximized. Finally, that stops responding to the taskbar clicks once again. So let's cover this first. He's got another question first, but let's cover this one. So what did we determine we think is going on here?
Well, what's interesting is that I can't repro the part about it not working after a while. Like, I will keep clicking with either the mouse or using a keyboard shortcut. I've got Explorer in the first spot right here, so it'll respond to Win Key 1 as well.
Yes.
Now, if I had multiple Explorer windows, or in his case, IE tabs, using Win Key 1 will only show the preview.
Yeah.
And hitting it multiple times, so I don't really have to go here, okay. So if I was to use Win Key 1, I am now cycling through.
It's like an alt tab specifically to that application.
Exactly. So my thought is that if he's got one IE window open, or one instance of the program running, this will work fine. You know, you can click it to minimize it and maximize it like I'm doing with Notepad or the debugger that I've got here. Or you can cycle it with the Win Key and then the number that's corresponding to its place on the taskbar.
Yeah.
So in the case of my debugger, it'd be Win Key 5. You know, so it'll come up and down. But if you have multiple open, all it's going to do is it's going to cycle through each of those tabs. So it's not going to minimize and maximize, and it's not going to do it either by the Win Key or the mouse click. At this point, that's the best that I can theorize.
Yeah.
If it is not this, then the other thing that is a possibility is that he's got a shell extension that's screwing around with it.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I can't be certain what's going on. This is the only thing that I've been able to reproduce.
Okay. So we think that, you know, he might be opening up another instance of this application. That's when it stops working. So let us know, Eddie. We'll keep digging into it if that's
And you
not
might have
problem.
Actually turned off the preview. So, you know, in my case, because I have Arrow on and I have the Arrow peak or the Arrow preview here, if that's turned off, you're still going to get the same effect.
Yeah.
You're just not going to see the preview there.
Okay. Eddie's next question. I have Microsoft Security Essentials installed and updated, despite the fact that the pop-up blocker in IE is on sometimes when I visit normal websites, for example, news sites. I notice that the pop-up window with commercials are being opened behind the main IE window. What's even stranger is that sometimes IE asks me whether I allow pop-ups on that site, and even if I dismiss it and don't allow them, they still pop up. I was wondering if this can be a result of a virus, viruses installed on the PC. I did see an MSE log that some viruses were quarantined and told it to delete them.
Well, interesting. Okay, so let's address the first issue. When IE detects that you have pop-ups and you're seeing what's known as a pop-under, you're seeing the ads that show behind the window, you know, in a new window, it's not necessarily correlating to the exact same thing. So you're seeing a message for pop-ups, and you're seeing a pop-under, but it's not necessarily the same thing that caused it.
Mm-hmm.
You can have pop-ups that are actually being blocked, but the pop-under is actually still showing.
Yeah.
Because it is using IE functionality. There are other extensions that you can get for IE that'll stop this as well, but ultimately the site is doing something that it shouldn't, and it is, we're allowing it because the functionality that it's using is not just for ads, it's, you know, for actual, you know, good functionality.
Yeah. Now, like if you're on a news site and you click on a video and it comes up in a pop-up window, that might be something that you actually want.
Exactly. Yes. And there are things that a website can do to emulate the fact that you've clicked the mouse. Mm-hmm. It's not good practice. And if this is a new site, you actually...
I could tell it's not good practice by the way you rolled your eyes when you said that. So.
Exactly. Now, the second part is that MSC is saying that it found some viruses, some sort of malware on the system, and it quarantined them. That's good. What you should do is run it again in full scan mode. Mm-hmm. So, you know, start up Microsoft Security Essentials and tell it to do a full, thorough scan.
Yeah, so that was Eddie's, this part of his second question. It says, how can I be sure if my PC isn't infected? Is there a deep scan that I can run or something of that sort?
And there is. Security Essentials will do a deep scan. And I've said this before, if you do suspect things, you can download the offline Security Essentials.
Yeah.
Boot from a CD or a USB stick that will also do the scan. Don't necessarily take one scanner at face value. You know, there's hijack this, there's malware bytes, there's, you know, multiple different things that you can run if you really want to be certain. Of course, the only real way to be certain, wipe the machine, reload. Mm-hmm. You probably will be okay, you know, especially if Security Essentials detected it.
Yeah.
I wouldn't worry too much, unless you start seeing, you know, weirder behavior.
Yeah. Okay. All right, next question from Pedro. He says, I've got a question about Windows 8. I've been running my personal laptop at work for the past couple of weeks since my work desktop died, and I'm having some problems accessing UNC paths. I'm a keyboard guy, so I'm used to hitting Windows R and typing a path to browse. Say, /Pedro-PC-C$. On my laptop, this has been failing. I get this error. The network path is not found. I get the same behavior even if I use the IP address of the machine. Another interesting thing is if I try pinging that machine, it resolves the name correctly, but the ping fails. I'm connected to our network over Wi-Fi, and my laptop is not in the domain. I have the same problem when I connect at home.
There's a lot of different reasons for this one. I would say the first thing to do is contact your network admin. You're doing this at work. You have a domain at work. You're using a non-domain join machine trying to access domain resources.
Yeah.
When we try to do that here at Microsoft, we have certain policies, IPsec policies, which dictate the fact that only domain joined resources can access other domain joined resources.
Yeah.
We specifically block that. Your IT admin may be doing the same thing. I don't know. The other thing that you're doing is you're accessing an admin share. So when you're accessing the $, this is the hidden drive root share that is supposed to only be accessed by administrators. This won't work from your workgroup joined machine unless you have the same username and password on your non-domain joined machine that's on the network resource that you're trying to connect to.
Yeah.
And if you have UAC turned on, it filters the local password connecting, or the local credentials trying to connect to the network resource. There's a lot of different things that could be going wrong with this. You can have firewall policies that are pushed onto your domain joined machine that allow you to access it that is not on your workgroup machine. Your domain joined machine may be actively refusing connections. So I'd, you know, go check the event log on the domain-joined remote machine, see what's going on there. It might have file and printer sharing turned off. There are, again, lots and lots of different reasons why this can happen this way. Talk to your network admin. There's really only so much that we'd be able to troubleshoot. But needless to say, you're trying to access a domain resource from a non-domain-joined machine, it is likely not going to work.
Okay. And are you disappointed that after 6 years I still say backslash instead of whack?
Back whack.
All right.
From say back whack and then there's forward whack.
Ugh. Ugh. Gives me chills. From Sciotomy says, hi, I'd like to know if there's a way to make Windows, namely Windows Server 2012, run a script right after it recovers from a crash like BSOD. I'd like to make it send me an email. Yo, something very bad just happened to machine name. Go fix it now.
Yes, in fact, there is. A couple of different ways you can do this. You can use SCCM, System Center Configuration Manager, SCOM, Operations Manager, all the major Windows server administration tools that we've got. You can also have a handy little script emailed to you with an event log trigger.
Cool.
You can use PowerShell as being the script that uses, you know, send mail if you have Outlook installed on your machine. It'll send you mail. This is John Howard's blog on the Hyper-V team, TechNet article. We'll have a link in the show notes. It talks about how to do things automatically based on event log triggers and sending mail. It's actually quite cool.
Okay. All right. Well, that's that. From Joe, some time ago when using Windows 7, I doubled my system's RAM from 4 gig to 8 gig. Can you please explain why it shows a message 8 gig, 7.86 gig usable? I'm not using the onboard integrated graphics, blah, blah, blah. There are a lot more there, but... And he says, Larry, no problem pronouncing my name incorrectly. I think I said it wrong last time because it's spelled J-O-A-O. Here in Portugal, my name is pronounced Joe. But I prefer my old pronunciation, Joe. So,
yes, I'm sure he prefers that as well.
I appreciate that, too. So what changed here? Because it used to be different, right?
Yeah, it used to be different. Back in Win 7 development, when people added RAM to their system, we would actually only show the 7.68 usable in the system properties. And people actually really complained. It's like, hey, I added this RAM. Where is it?
I'm supposed to have 8 gig.
I'm
what
supposed
happened?
To have 8 gig.
You've robbed me.
So we actually now show the two numbers. The actual installed RAM, which is just the pure physical sticks size that you have in there, we show it as saying, yes, this actually got installed, it's physically present, but the fact that some of it is not usable is actually by design. And it's not just shared video that can use up this memory, it's add-in cards, the PCI bus, or PCIe, can squirrel away some of this memory for its own usage. So the fact that it's not presently usable by Windows, it's still used by your machine, but it's not addressable by regular applications, and that's completely by design.
And it doesn't seem to be a huge amount.
No, it's usually not a huge amount.
Okay. All right, next question from Kenneth. I have a Dell Studio XPS 435 MT desktop. When I turn on my computer, it boots really slow. The little circle of dot spins really slow. It takes about 10 minutes to boot, and if I turn it off when the dots are spinning really slow, and then turn back on, it boots up right away. I need help with that. I also have SATA hard drives and SATA DVD drives. Hard drives are set up using Intel Desktop Workstation Server Express chipset SATA RAID controller, and the IDE ATA control does not show in Device Manager. When I look at the system BIOS, it shows hard drive as SATA setup and DVD as a TAPI. You cannot change it in BIOS. I tried. Is a TAPI slower than SATA? Why is BIOS showing a SATA DVD drive as a TAPI?
Lot of acronyms going on in there. So first question is, has it ever booted up faster than this, right? So
yeah.
He's saying that it's booting up really slow, but if it's never booted up fast, then this might actually be the baseline, although really 10 minutes is a seriously long time.
Yeah.
I did notice that he said that he's configured his OS drive as RAID somewhere in there,
mm-hmm.
which is interesting because if he doesn't have multiple disks, then setting up his RAID is not going to be useful. If you have multiple hard drive controllers and you don't have drives connected to those controllers, the BIOS is still going to go through and say, hey, is something connected? And it's going to wait for a timeout.
And if nothing's connected, then it's going to have to wait.
It's going to have to wait, and this is going to keep going across however many number of ports that you have installed, waiting for that timeout. So if you go into the BIOS, if you only have one drive, take it off of RAID. It's not required. It's not necessary at all.
Yeah.
Just put into regular ECI mode. And if you have multiple ports where there's nothing attached, disable them. So they'll have set as being auto. I always put those as just straight on disabled.
Yeah.
If you have other hard drive controllers in there, because a lot of motherboards would have, you know, a standard hard drive controller and then the RAID controller, you can just turn off whichever ones are not being used. And that's going to get you a much faster boot up time. If your CD-ROM is, depending on what kind it is, it might have jumpers on the back, and it might actually be jumpered for a TAPI for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
You'd have to check with the manufacturer that DVD or CD-ROM. I couldn't tell you which one it is, but you might have to re-jumper it to say that it's for SATA.
Yeah.
But, I mean, at this point, that's really the best that I can come up with.
So, probably the most important part there, has this machine ever booted quickly?
Right.
So, get back to us, let us know about that, Kenneth, and we'll keep troubleshooting as appropriate. All right, next question. After I dictate an email using Windows 7 built-in speech recognition, I want the computer to read it back to me so I can review it. I couldn't find anything in the menu that seems to do that. The narrator program doesn't seem to work at all in Office 2007.
Well, oddly enough, Office 2010 has a text-to-speech feature. Mm-hmm. And it's in 2010, 2013, and
Office 365.
Newly released Office 365 for $100 for a 5 license use off of 5 machines for a year, which is really kind of cool. But this is a built-in feature now into Office.
What we don't see there is 2007.
It is unfortunately not in 2007.
Okay, so that explains why.
Right.
All right, next question. I installed the program, and I get concerned that it might contain a virus or give me all kinds of pop-up ads. So I successfully uninstalled it, but it left the toolbar across the top that I want to get rid of. How do I get rid of a toolbar? So that's a good question. There you go. Where would you start? Add or remove programs?
Add or remove programs, see if it's listed there. Sometimes they are, sometimes they're not, especially if you think that they're spyware or malware.
Mm-hmm.
They're really probably not.
They don't want to be there.
They don't want to be there. Just go to Manage Add-ons, and it should be listed here. Don't just show currently loaded add-ons. Choose all of them.
Okay.
See if there's anything you don't recognize in there, and you can remove it.
Okay. Done deal. Easy. All right. Next question. I have a large hard drive, but over the course of time, I find that now only have 5 gig of space. While manually looking through my hard drive, I notice that the folder C, Program Data, Microsoft, takes up 2.2 gig of space. Is it possible to manually delete C, Program Data, Microsoft folder, or at the very least reduce the size of this folder without breaking Microsoft programs? Is there any other way to reduce the size of this folder?
No! This is me leaping through the camera, through the internet, to stop you from deleting anything willy-nilly under Program Data Microsoft.
Yeah.
No, don't delete it. You don't tell me how big your hard drive is to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
If you said it was a terabyte and then now it's down to 5 gig and Program Data is taking up, or Program Data Microsoft is taking up 2.2, that's actually not, a good ratio in terms of what you want to clean up. That isn't it.
Yeah, but a 64-gig SSD...
64-gig SSD.
Different story.
That's a different story.
And it could be that 5 gig might be about all you're going to end up with if,
64-gig, you should, off of a clean install of Windows... 32-gig
SSD, then.
32-gig SSD. I mean, let's see, on this box, right? This is a 32-gig SSD. And I am down to 4.34 gig.
And so the story there is use an external hard drive.
Use an external hard drive, uninstall software that you're not using, run the disk cleanup wizard.
Or another thing that I do with a machine that I have like this, it has an SD slot.
Mm-hmm.
You can put another 64 gig right there.
That's right.
And you can swap those hard drives out, mm-hmm. hard drives being, flash media. But so there you go. That might be all. But what else could they do? I mean, Windurstat, run that.
Windurstat, sure.
Big files that are taking up space.
And just uninstall things that you're not using. Run the disk cleanup wizard. It'll get rid of your temp stuff. You might have, a very large index. If you have a lot of files in there, you might have a large index. Going towards your suggestion of an SD card, you can change where your index is at.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, there is... one tip that came in, people are constantly saying, hey, when you go to control panel, it shows big icons. Well, guess what? I switched it to small icons, and it persists if you go to the control panel in the way that I just did. Go here, click on computer, click on control panel. It'll automatically go to the all control panels. Anyways, in here, go to... just go to indexing, which is actually the much faster way of searching for anything in here. Go to advanced. You can change where your index location is, and guess what? Program Data Microsoft. that's where the index goes. So yeah. You're wondering what might be taking up all that space? Probably the index.
And could you put that off to a SD card?
You can put it wherever the heck you want.
What happens if you take the SD card out? Then you lose your index. Then you don't have an index.
Yeah, and the indexer will be very unhappy.
Yeah.
Okay. It'd be very, very unhappy if you move it to something that does not exist.
So if you do that, leave the card in. Tape over it.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And that will definitely help a lot.
Okay.
And if you have a large number of index files.
Yeah. All right, next question. I'm the sysadmin for a small company, and I'm looking at an easy way to rename all the computers in the office to a more uniform naming convention. I've tried playing with the netdom rename computer line in command prompt, but it doesn't seem to work at all, possibly because they're not on a group policy. We set our computers up using a work group and then have our employees connect to work servers using remote desktop connections. Is there a PowerShell tool or a program that I can download to help me rename all the computers on our network?
Well, here's the thing, right? You first need to get each of those machines to run a command.
Yeah.
And you can do this as a kind of a multi-step approach. Here's a really quick PowerShell script on renaming it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So you do this through WMI. The problem is that if you're going to have a hard time getting the script to run
mm-hmm.
On the machines because they're not domain joined.
Yeah.
So in order to get the script on the machine, what you can use is you're saying that you're connecting to a TS server. So under the options, you can have starting a particular program on connection.
Okay.
So when you connect to the machine, you can have it run a program that will then run a script on the TS server, copy something down locally to the machine using the double backslash TS client backslash C dollar or C, because if you share out your local resources here, you can share out your drives,
yeah.
which will be then accessible, and you can run programs which will create a script which can run on the remote machine. Use that script to rename it. Now, that's a whole lot of work, a whole mm-hmm. lot of effort to do versus simply joining a domain,
yeah,
which is actually how I would approach this problem. Don't screw around with having work group machines. It's not what it's designed for. It's not designed to be managed in that manner.
Mm-hmm.
And just join the domain.
Okay. All right, next question. I want to be able to find specific photos in my huge archive, so I put some tags in the EXIF header. The problem is, how do I search for a file that contains a specific tag?
So, you know, you start up, you go to pictures.
Assuming that's where they are. Go to whatever folder right. you have them in.
I don't have any pictures here, but you just use the tags colon.
With no E.
With no E. Tags colon. And then, you know, whatever you want.
We used to have a picture. We talked about this on a previous show. We used wasn't a picture of the cartoon character.
Yeah, I've since blown away the machine and installed Fresh.
All right, pick of the week time. Pick of the week. So my pick of the week this week is Reolution iClone 5, which is an app that I played with for a lot of the weekend because I was sick and at home and just wanted to play with this. Very, very cool application. So it lets you do some character animation,
mm-hmm.
And it, you know, there's a lot of applications like this. And,
Maya.
Yeah, and you can also say, like, you have your character, and then you load an MP3, and you say, hey, this is my MP3 for the voice track, and it auto-mouths the character.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, the cool thing with this, though, is where normally you would have to go in and move the character around a little bit, and I'm doing the robot right now, just so, you know, you can't see, but... No, I'm not going to do it now. But,
I don't know what kind of robot was that, but...
Sorry. So, normally...
That was not Klaatu.
Yeah. So, normally, you know, you move the character around, you keep going. This makes it a little bit quicker because you can actually do mocap with a Kinect. So, you hook your Kinect up, and you use the application, you point it towards you, and it'll let you actually start doing the robot like I was just doing, and then puts it right in the application. And then you can go in and tweak it afterwards. So if you didn't quite do the move that you wanted to do, if you can't actually windmill when you break dance, then you can go in and kind of, you know, do that manually. But it's kind of cool. It's got particle effects. It's got, you know, a whole bunch of different things. And I really want to just do something cool with this this application. So you will see something, I'm sure, in the future with this.
That is definitely very, very interesting. And it just shows like the what people are doing with Kinect and the SDK and how quickly it is that they're taking you know, just ideas from a regular person, how a regular person can easily express those ideas quickly.
Yeah.
You know, so they're getting from, you know, just a base idea to something that's finished in such a short period of time.
Yeah.
It's very impressive.
Incredible times we live in. And so, yeah, that's Reolution 5. They have a demo that you can download and then try it out, see what you think. It puts a watermark all over the video that you export, but you can at least play around with it, see what you think, and then go ahead and get that if you like it. All right, the next pick of the week, which is a pick anti-pick.
Yes, this is a pick anti-pick.
So this was a pick of the week that I sent, and then Gove was like, oh my God, what did you, no, no, you did the no again. So massive collection of registry tweaks all in one spot for Windows 7. And this is the kind of thing that I would see this and go, oh, that's cool, that's handy, and I'd just install it. And then when you saw it, you were like, Larry, what's the matter with you? Come on, don't do this. So Gove, give me your best case here.
What? Oh, best case? Well, we have no idea if these tweaks have ever been tested with each other. We don't know what they're going to do. Even if it does have
but they're,
a...
they're on a page that you can download. They must have been tested.
This is my snort of derision. My hands up in the air of derision. Yes, these kind of tools have been produced for years,
yeah.
Right? Heck, we produced one.
Tweak UI.
Tweak UI a long time ago. And there's a reason why we don't actually make it anymore. It's because it really didn't get very good testing.
Yeah.
Right? And it did things to the system that were like, eh.
And when you do combinations of different tweaks,
that, and that's
then,
the thing that really gets us.
Yeah.
Yes, it does
Registry
have...
inception.
Registry inception. It does have a reset button on it. You know, so it's supposed to get you back to the previous setting.
Reset from what the application did, or reset from known good, or
that's,
reset
that's
to...
That's a question. That is a question. So it will not keep track of states that happen outside of the app. All it can do is set it back to what it thinks are the known goods. But if it's messing around with registry settings that are being changed by the system... or by other applications, and then you start mucking around with them, yes, you can cause things that are going to potentially break the OS or break other applications, and if you reset it, it still may not actually fix it if it's not in a state that is actually expected.
Yeah.
So while I am not a huge fan of these, I can understand why someone might create them. It's a great learning tool, right?
Yeah.
But in the end, it's ultimately not a lot different from our own group policy.
Yeah.
Which is really the front end that should be used, because the group policy is not just a setting, not just setting reg keys. It understands those reg keys and it knows how to properly set them or call the right APIs to set them with additional state information.
Mm-hmm.
When you call you know, a group policy and you look at it and says, oh, it's just flipping this one key, it might not actually be flipping just that one key. It might be calling APIs or sending state in other reg keys that you don't know about. So this is a very much a buyer beware. While it may work for some people, there's certainly no guarantee that it'll work for everybody. And if your machine blows up because of it, format, repave, I'm not even going to bother looking.
All right, so don't make Gove's blood curdle. Just don't use it. I'm not going to... It's not even going to be my pick of the week now. You've dissuaded me so much from it. All right, so that's the show for this week. If you have questions, you can email us at defragshow@microsoft.com, defrag@microsoft.com, whatever. We'll get it. And then you can also leave notes in the show notes, and we can get back to you there. But we prefer the email, so Gove can go back and forth with you in the middle of the night while I lay there sick in bed laughing at the whole
affair. Well, I hope you feel better soon, dude.
Thank you. All right, see you next week.
Take care.